Welcome back, everybody, to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel. You could tell I'm here today with my producer, Allison Goodman. And we have a really exciting episode for you guys today. I loved our guest. His name is Blake Moynes. You guys might recognize his face and his name from Bachelor Nation. And he also was on, what was the name of it, Allison?
Bachelor in Paradise.
Oh, yeah. I don't really, you know, that one I don't watch. So, but to what is Bachelor in Paradise? It's when the singles get together and try and see if anyone's a match.
Yeah, they go on vacation to Mexico with a bunch of other people from the Bachelor world. And
it's like the hottest ones or something, because they all seem to be, they all look great in a bathing suit.
I mean, is there anyone on The Bachelor that's not the hottest one? They were probably the hottest in their high school, the hottest in whatever. They're on,
Yeah.
You know. Now they're on the
Right.
beach and they're hanging out at the pool and yeah, seems like fun.
Well, what's interesting about Blake and why we got Blake on the show is that, you know, while he's a name and a face that people recognize, what's better about him, in my opinion, is that he is really into conservation efforts and helping wild animals. And he's on this big crusade to get people to be aware of what's going on in the wild. So we had Blake come on to talk about how he got started with this platform. What did you think of him as a guest?
Well, you know, I think that after The Bachelor, they get a lot of opportunities to make money influencing online and, you know, selling brands. And I'm sure he gets a lot of asked to do teeth whitening and all the stuff that all the influencers do. But I
Right.
love that what he does with his platform is something different and important and something he believes in, something that he had always talked about before the show. So it's not like something happened and all of a sudden he changed. This is who he was. And he just got a much bigger platform to talk about what his passion is.
That's right. And he also is a co-founder of something called SOSA, Save Our Species Alliance, where he frequently collaborates with other conservation organizations, participates in fundraising initiatives, and really uses his social media presence to raise awareness about pressing environmental issues. So as we find out in this episode, he talks a lot about these animals, but he also talks about, you know, what individuals can do to help the cause. His passion really shines through. So I really enjoyed talking to Blake. What stood out from the interview to you that you like want people to listen in for?
Well, I think that everyone thinks they can't do anything,
Mm-hmm.
but there are small things that everyone can do in their own community. And Blake talks about that. Look, Blake also does give a little bit of gossip on Bachelor stuff, which is always fun too.
Yeah.
And I enjoy. So, you know, I think it's a good mix of everything.
Okay, great. Well, I hope everybody enjoys our conversation with Blake Moynes. Hi, Blake. I'm so happy to have you here today.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So you're right outside of Toronto?
Just outside of Toronto. I just say Toronto because it's easier, right? No one knows a lot about Canada up here.
Well, I know a little bit about it because when I was in college, I had a boyfriend who got drafted to the CFL. And is that what it's called?
Yeah. Okay. I haven't
like said those words since college.
Sure.
And he lived in Cowansville. Do you even know where that is? It's
no,
near
it's
Montreal.
Okay.
It's near Montreal, and his family only spoke French.
Okay.
And it gave me such anxiety because when I would go up there, I don't know people that like really don't speak English, right? So it was awkward because they did not speak English. And I didn't understand how many kisses you do on the sides of the cheek. And the first time I met his mom, I kissed her on the lips by accident because I went one way, she went the other way. And that's my memory of being in Canada. So
yeah, that the feel of, right, those intros where it's different cultures and it's always awkward. You just don't, you know, it just doesn't feel right. You're
right.
Always,
like you're you never know if you're supposed to bow, shake the hand. Weird.
Yeah, I know.
It's weird. Okay. So everyone knows you first and foremost for being on The Bachelorette. So I guess we got to talk about that for a second, even though that's not why I have you on the show. I was curious, what did you do for a living and who were you before you got cast?
Yeah, so I had a couple different jobs, but I worked mostly as a falconer seasonally, essentially. So I worked with birds of prey and a couple different facets for conservation initiatives in helping universities with certain studies and deterring certain bird populations. And then I also worked in wildlife and pest management and started the wildlife division for this company, dealing with urban wildlife, human conflict, foxes or raccoons or coyotes, anything like that. So I was working in wildlife, just not to the extent that I ended up getting to, which is now global conservation and more exotic.
But wait, I'm curious, like in a park or like you were taking care of raccoons in people's backyards?
And
falcons.
So with falcons, I essentially would drive around with birds of prey and monitor different contracts, essentially. So I could be at an airport one day, then I could be working on a conservation center one day. So all the contracts were different when I was working with birds of prey. And then when it came to wildlife in urban settings, it could be anything from, it could be at someone's house or it could be at a business. It could be anything. Managing human wildlife conflict in an urban setting.
Got it. I'm always curious about those people that post on Instagram about their relationships with raccoons. How much do you know about raccoons? Because they seem so, dirty and gross, and people tell you not to touch them and they can get agitated and mean, but then you see people that like have raccoons living in their homes.
Yeah. Over time, it always gets to a point where they need to end that relationship because a full-blown adult raccoon is not suited for home. It's just not. Highly intelligent, can be super destructive, get into everything. It's just not. You see it because it happens in the adolescence, in the early stages of a juvenile raccoon. You can kind of deal with that, but it gets to a stage where you just can't handle that anymore. So, they can be habituated to humans and people try to keep them as pets, but usually doesn't end up working out very well.
Okay, so it's not like a dog or a cat where they're domesticated and then they snuggle with you at night until they die.
No, especially because they are nocturnal. And so they're at night, they're nightmares, right? So, it's not something you want to do. You definitely don't want to go that route.
Got it. Okay, so we'll go back to the animal stuff in a minute. So how did you actually get cast on The Bachelorette?
Super random, super, super random. Playing hockey up here in Canada as we do, and sitting, just having drinks with the guys after a game. And one of the only remaining in the group that's single, like not having kids or, well on my way to being engaged or whatever, after getting out of a long-term relationship. And just knowing the personality that I am, they're like, you would do great on like a dating show or putting yourself out there on a reality show because you don't give a fuck what anyone thinks. I'm like, okay, what's the chances of me actually getting a Canadian guy? What's the chance of me actually doing any of those and actually getting on it in the first place? That night, I promised I would send in a photo and the first little like paragraph to the application process for The Bachelorette. It's pages long. I'm like, I'm not doing this. It's going to take me an hour to do. I'm not doing it. Sent in just the first little blurb. 3 months went by, I didn't hear it. Then all of a sudden I forgot about it. I heard a call back and then it kind of spun out of control. But I also applied like Naked and Afraid, Survive. Like I wanted to do like cool stuff that's in my realm of like the outdoors and then The Bachelor was the one that ended up calling. And then I just said yes to a crazy opportunity.
So did you have to do any, like interviews, or they saw you and they were like, oh, this is the guy? Or were you like in a long line of men and then you got picked?
Yeah. I mean, I applied as a contestant of 30 to be pursuing the Bachelorette at the time. It was going to be Claire Crawley. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's always a casting process and I don't know how they go about that on their end, but they ended up choosing us and it just, kind of spiraled.
So I'm always curious about this. Do you know the girl you're going to be vying for and that makes a difference, or they just want you to be on the show and you have to decide if you have chemistry there and then?
Yeah. I mean, it's a combination of both those things. So most times you have a kind of an inkling as to who it's going to be, right? Because you watch the season prior, you see the three girls that are probably going to be it. And then they also choose you depending on your interest. So they say, hey, it's probably going to be one of these three girls. Who do you really like? And so depending, because people are dedicated to the lead. So they'll also cast based on that. For my instance, I ended up knowing it was going to be Claire because in my hotel room waiting, she was announced before I was going to go on. But the COVID shut everything down. So I had to go home the day of. So I then knew for 3 months who it was going to be. And so my instance was a little bit different than most.
Right. Were you able to contact her on social media or anything in those 3 months?
I did. Yeah. It was that became a whole thing on the show on the night one, because I was the only one that did that and I wasn't supposed to do that. And there was a whole thing to that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, all right. Now explain to me, when you're on The Bachelorette or The Bachelor or whatever it is, about chemistry. Like, I am a female. I've been dating forever. I used to run nightclubs in Las Vegas where you had at least 5,000 people coming into the room every night. And I was the one woman who you had to know or you couldn't get into the club. So I knew every man for 5 years in a row. And I would always joke about how hard it was to find someone that you have chemistry with, that you really like, that the timing is right. So isn't that really hard?
Certainly. But I think the thing is when you're all of a sudden going on this big show and you're selected for it and you have this bachelorette that's chosen, like she has to be like this, you're kind of in this mindset of like, if she's chosen to be the bachelorette, she's got to be a catch, right? Yeah. And so you really try to like, she's this queen. They're like, oh my, I need her. Like you, and you're kind of, you're not, you just, you self teach yourself that like, this is someone I need. And it's, you force yourself through trying to build that chemistry. And then obviously you see that she just is like, no, 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 no.
Right.
But you try to, you kind of believe in just yourself and the process of like the fantasy of it all.
Yeah, of course. So I'm curious, when you decided to go on, I mean, I heard the story of what you just said while you were sitting with the guys playing hockey, but do you think that you felt like you wanted to go on it because you wanted to find love and that was a possibility for you? Or were you like, I'm not dumb. This is a great platform and I'm really into conservation and animals and wildlife, and this could be really great for my cause?
Well, at the time I didn't have a cause, like I didn't have anything wildlife related. There was no understanding of what I was going to be able to do.
Got it.
Until it happened, because then when I started advocating for it, then I was seeing fundraising petitions. I'm like, holy shit, there's something to be done here with a voice. But it didn't come till after. It was almost impossible to predict that the impact I could have made until after the fact. And even then you would have had to do well or be likable enough for that to happen. But I went on the experience originally because I didn't know who it was going to be. Go to do a crazy experience. But if you're not open to actually falling and connecting and trying to see that through, you usually go home pretty early. Right. So go for a crazy experience and then see what happens with the actual connection aspect, but be willing to dive in if it's there.
Right. So you eventually get engaged to somebody and then unengaged after the show. Like, what is the pressure like to keep that relationship going?
So, yeah, I mean, especially after going on a season prior and failing with the two leads that came on, then I went on a second one where it was, you know, I ended up getting engaged to Katie. A lot of pressure there because I'd failed a couple times before on that public stage.
Wait, and before you answer what I just said, you got engaged. Were you in love with this girl or were you like, I failed a couple times. This is the girl. I want this girl.
No, when you're there, because I went on pursuing her late on a season. So like I wanted to go and meet her. So I was like in my head, like this girl, this girl, this girl. They had to like really feel me out before coming on that season because they didn't want a stunt essentially. And so it was like this, this whole fantasy, this whole thing that I thought of like a hopeless romantic, but coming on, I really think I'm a match for her. Then all of a sudden I'm like, holy shit, it's actually happening. You're really in that moment in this fantasy love. That's the issue. It's like, does it happen?
Does it translate? Yeah.
Right. So like in that, absolutely. It was like this fairy tale that I was like, oh my God, it's actually happening. Everything I thought about this girl, and now we're here and we're doing it. Right. So it's kind of a crazy mind fuck in that sense. Mm.
With summer right around the corner, I know everyone is trying their best to get in shape and eat healthy. If you are one of those people who have tried the diets, the cleanses, even intermittent fasting, and you felt like nothing really worked for you, let me introduce you to Prolon. It's the scientifically proven meal plan solution you've been waiting for. Prolon was researched and developed for decades at the University of Southern California Longevity Institute and backed by leading U.S. medical centers. It helps promote healthy blood sugar, supports cardiovascular health, and reduces abdominal fat. And this all starts with Prolon's 5-day program, snacks, soups, and beverages, all designed to keep your body in a fasting state. It literally nourishes your body while making cells believe that they're fasting. If you listen to my pod, you know I did the 5-day program and I absolutely loved it. It was the exact reset I was craving. I never was hungry. I loved everything. They had these great chocolatey snacks. The soups were amazing and I did not feel hungry. Prolon makes everything as simple as possible. They deliver everything you need for the 5-day program, including all those snacks and soups, all organized and labels, and just seeing what you have to look forward to helps you get motivated to keep going. If you are looking for a kickstart or interested in trying something new, Prolon is a great place to start. Right now, Prolon is offering Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/understood. That's prolonlife.com/understood for this special offer. That's prolonlife.com/understood. Yeah. So after you left the show, was it hard to continue that? Or was it evident soon after that this was just because of the romance of the show?
I would say the first 5 months was good, but we were also still living in a fantasy of it because we had to secretly date each other, you know, out in LA. Right. We put up in these, you know, I guess be secret. So you're still living this almost fantasy style life. It's not real still. Mm-hmm. Things were great through that. It was when we really honestly started spending lots of time together, weeks and weekends away and things, where we started to be like, hey, there's some hiccups here. There's some issues in the real side of this. So yeah, it took about 6-7 months until not very long after going public before really realizing here, okay, this is not it.
Yeah. So, and then back to my original question, which was about the pressure about keeping that relationship. Was it hard for you guys to come out and say, okay, we're done here? Or did you have to contact the network first and say, by the way, we're going to have to do this?
Yeah, our breakup came really out of nowhere in a sense. Like we both knew it was coming, but not on that day. And I actually had a public appearance the next day where I had to speak on how we were doing. And I had to hold that whole interview. I had to let the show know because they need to be aware of all of a sudden we go public, right? They're trying to help us along the way. And when it doesn't happen, I mean, it's a downfall for the show in a sense. The show wants successful relationships out of it. So
yeah,
pressure was absolutely there. But when it came down to Katie and I are very much really don't give a fuck and we'll take care of ourselves first. There's a selfish aspect to it. It's like, hey, I hate the public is going to be able to come at us for this, but like, we can't go faking this relationship when it's not working anymore, clearly.
Of course. Yeah. So The Bachelor and The Bachelorette don't have a lot of success lately, I don't think. Is there something that you would think, now having been through it a couple times, this is where they're getting it wrong, here's what they should do to get it right?
Oof, it's a really tough question. I think, you know, if this was clear, I think we'd have more success in it. I think that how do you make it as real life as possible on the show? And it's almost impossible to do, right? Like you only can get a certain amount of time. You can't lengthen the show any more than what it is as well, because it's just too much. So I don't know that answer, to be honest. Yeah. I really don't. I mean, they do a decent job of the casting. There's, you know, 30 women you get to choose from. It's really, really difficult. I wish I had that answer. I really do.
You know, it's interesting. I know you watch Love is Blind. And so I would think that what they get right, I mean, they don't always get it right, is that they make these couples live for a couple of weeks together, or at least that's how they make it seem on the show, where they have to deal with each other and they get more time. And that seems like it really helps you decide very quickly if it's going to work or not. I would think it's just too many people and you're narrowing it down so quickly. And then you really have very limited time with the one person. Also, wait, I was just curious. Is it a real thing that you could be in love with two people and not know who you're going to propose to or say yes to? I think that's bizarre.
Again, I think it plays into what the craziness of the show, which is you're in these amazing situations with these women who really have really great, like I can see yourself falling for two. I think three is a little extreme, but I think you can really come down to two and be like, fuck, like I don't know here. I think you can always are going to have an idea as to probably what's going to be, but there's some decisions coming down to the end of me and the family. And like, what is that sexual chemistry like? And all those things that like will come down to for some people, because this past season, there was a couple phenomenal women there where I understand where he would have had some trouble in sorting that out. And so, especially for men, I think girls are maybe a little bit more decisive. For men, you know, we don't think things through as much. So I think you're open to really exploring that.
Right.
As long as you kind of can, it's.
Yeah, I get it.
I know I'd be a disaster. I know I'd be a disaster if I ever was in a lead spot. I think it would be trouble. I don't like disappointing. I fall hard. So yeah, I can see it being an issue for sure.
Right. So are you dating someone now?
No, I'm dating, trying to date.
Right. But not in a committed relationship. I saw recently, or like in the last couple of days, that you were on a podcast with one of the girls from Love is Blind, and you guys admitted you had had a little fling or something on a trip. You just want to talk about that for people that follow that story?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, if you actually listen to the podcast, it's not never confirmed. We joke on it. And it's very sarcastic and loose. We have a fun relationship. We've actually not dated or hooked up, but people really ran with that.
Oh, got it. That was the headline and that was the clip.
Okay. And then all of a sudden, boom, 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 boom. And it's like, okay, take that, take and run with it. But like, we actually haven't, but.
Okay.
My name is Mackenzie and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
Sure.
But do you guys really have a pact that if she doesn't get married by the time she's 35, you guys are going to get married? Is that true?
Have you ever made one of those before?
Yeah, when I was like 7.
Yeah, so it's playful, like 7.
You're
like,
yeah, okay, got it. But like people are making a headline about it, like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an interesting crossover in the shows and it's, you know, something to run with, right? It's another.
Got it. Okay, well, that's cute. I like it. Yeah. So, okay, let's move on to, one last question. What are the pros and cons of being on a show like that? I think it's obvious the platform that it gives you, but what you want to do is a huge pro.
Yeah, I think the big two takeaways I see, not from just myself, but in general, from the scope of everyone that I've talked to. Cons, everyone goes in with a huge ego thinking that it's going to be the most incredible thing for them and they're going to this, and that. So the cons coming off that, when that does not happen and your life goes the other way, massive cons in that sense. Alternatively, on the flip side, most people can come out of there with like way more confidence or like growth and more vulnerable. You're going through therapy every day, essentially. And so you're able to talk more and be more vulnerable in real life. Now, when I can talk about anything, I don't hide anything back because I've been so out there already. There's nothing to hide. I'm very confident in speaking with emotion and airing things out. So it really helps in the personal growth, emotional maturity, and that side of things.
Yeah.
But the problems are you can go into a downward spiral mentally if things don't play out the way that these big egos think typically it will for them.
Right. And also I think for women, for men too, it could be hard, but for women, especially when you're not, when you don't come off as, I'm going to just use the simple word likable, you know, that could really affect you because you're, now that we have social media, it's like people can really hate on you. And I think that is very difficult for some of these girls that, you know, they either they've been edited a certain way or they just really are not their best selves in that spotlight and the show isn't the thing for them. And it really can affect their reputation, I think, going forward.
100%. I know people who've lost jobs.
Yeah.
Or lost jobs because of an edit that's made or sometimes. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of things that happen here, but what it comes down to it, everyone thinks that's not going to happen. So they're not prepared for when it does.
Yeah.
And then it hits harder than they could ever imagined and some more serious than others. So yeah, that would be, again, like I said, the biggest con is that aspect of it.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about why I really wanted you on, which is to talk about what you are doing now. Cause it's so fascinating. You know, I wanted to tell you that First of all, I like animals more than I like people, but we're talking mostly about, you know, dogs because I interact with them and cats and all that kind of thing. But I will tell you, when I was in college, I was, I majored in communications, but my roommate at the time was majoring in veterinary science or whatever it was. She was trying to be a vet. And there was a class you could take over winter break where you could go study humpback whales in Maui. So I chose to go do that for credits. And it was the coolest thing that I've ever done. I got to live like in this little kind of shack with a bunch of people. We would get up at like 3 a.m. We'd get on these little boats. And my job, the group I was in, we were in charge of listening to the sounds of the humpbacks and try and follow the pods. And, you know, we would stop when we would see them breach and go under, and then we would put the microphone down and wait the 45 minutes until they sang. And they were trying to prove that it was only the male that was singing. I believe that's still the case, that they think that, but 20 years ago, whatever it was, that's what I was doing. And it was one of the coolest things that I've ever done. I mean, I thought that was so fun and so interesting. And then another time I went, I'd broken up with somebody, so I went on a trip by myself to Thailand. I went to Chiang Mai and Chiang Rai, and they have elephant sanctuaries there. And that, to me, with being in the wild like that and living with wildlife, was just so majestic. I don't know another word that it was like emotional, majestic, beautiful. And it was also somewhat scary because you feel like they're on their own, you know, but they're so smart at, you know, the life cycle that they have and knowing how to fend for themselves. But anyways, I loved it. So I find you interesting because that's kind of like what you've made your life mission. So how did you get into that now that you had this bigger platform, and how did you decide which missions to sort of talk about and champion?
Oh, yeah. I still battle with that decision-making regularly, because how do you say no when there's so many different initiatives that do need help and animals that do need help across the world, right? Mm. And so starting terrestrial for the most part, right, and focusing on the animals on land, because, you know, mammals, and there's something to that. Then I got to the ocean, and it's like, there's a whole whack of problems happening in the ocean all over the world. So it's really hard to make decisions, because decisions are on financial feasibility, how many times you've already worked with that specific animal. Like, there's challenges. Do they need money? Do they need reach? Like, well, there's so much that goes into decision making for that. In terms of you having kind of a, what I call, aha moment, right? You go out and you have these experiences, then change your mindset and you have this whole new perspective, right? Mm-hmm. I have that, which originally happened with rhinos, and then everything's kind of bridged from rhinos. So I've always had this amazing affiliation or connection to rhinos because of that, because I had the exact same thing that you had, just with rhinos.
Mm. Wow. What was your experience there? You went on a trip or something?
About a year before I ended up actually on the show, I was scrolling through and found a Time magazine, the last remaining northern white rhino, Sudan, that had just passed away. Mm. I got into a rabbit hole. I loved rhinos as a kid because they're kind of like a modern day dinosaur, powerful. The same type of feeling an elephant can give you, not the same intelligence as an elephant, not even close. Mm. But I got into a rabbit hole. And then I wanted to go figure out and find out, okay, why is the decline? Why the poaching? Why is this happening? Why is there only this amount left? So I went to South Africa by myself. I'm like, booked a ticket, spent 3 weeks out in South Africa working at the world's largest rhino sanctuary with orphan rhinos that were, their mums had been shot and killed in Kruger National Park for the most part. And this is a rehab center for the babies, all that. Absolutely. Wow. I've had that moment that you had, except with a connected of like poaching, how can I do more? All that stuff fell in love. And then boom, that aha moment sparked what is happening now.
Mm. So what, explain some of the animals that you have worked with up until now.
Yeah. So, I mean, rhinos has been a big one. I've worked a few different times with that. We're going to go back and do that in another month. Jaguars, pumas, black caiman down in Peru, doing a whole zoo shutdown and taking those animals out of the zoo and then putting them into a rewilding program with Oja Nueva down in Peru. We have done.
So is it because you think that particular zoo was bad, or you don't believe that wildlife should be in a zoo?
Two different conversations, but the first, so that zoo was Hoja Nueva and the government of Peru came together to shut down this underground zoo, essentially. And wow. So that shutdown, we helped, my team helped in getting them out, the storytelling, and we're shooting a whole project on that. But there's a big zoo, not a big zoo, but a zoo that had a bunch of different animals there that were malnourished, neglected, and being trafficked in and out of that zoo in the illegal pet trade. And so, So, I work with wildlife in all different aspects, and now the ocean too, with sharks. I'm going to do elephant work for the first time, hands-on, this coming month in Kenya. The opportunities keep, expanding. And again, it's so hard to say no. So I just keep saying yes to the opportunities and learning a lot through that.
That's so great. Wait, I want to go back to the zoo in a second. But speaking of elephants, did you see the news in the last 24 hours about the woman who was killed by an elephant?
Yes.
So, what I think is so important about stories like this, although it is very tragic what happened, we have to talk about the difference between, aggressive animals and animals that are just being reactive because they are scared or protecting a baby or whatever it is. But, I put myself into the animal's shoes of thinking, who are these people encroaching in my life and my world? We don't speak the same language and I'm scared and this is how I'm going to react. So do you know if they didn't kill that animal, did they? I mean, they don't have.
They wouldn't. In that instance, I would be shocked. There would be an outrage if they did that. So I would imagine that no, and you would probably hear about it if that did happen. The difference between, the elephant's not aggressive is probably what I read was a bull elephant, yeah, which they must tend to have more of an aggressive tendency because of what the stage that they're in.
Does that mean, a bull? It's a male?
Correct.
A young male, old male? It doesn't matter.
Once they get to a certain age, a bull elephant, once they hit like 14, they'll leave the group and they can kind of form their own groups, and they are more aggressive in that sense because they're always trying to encroach on new herds and join new herds. And so they're just more aggressive in that way. And there's ways to tell that. And in that sense, I think it was, I'd have to watch it again, but I think it was a bull elephant.
It was.
The situation there is unique because most times those elephants are aware, first off, and very familiar with vehicles, game drive vehicles in a safari setting. And for the most part, if you stand your ground, you can bluff off an elephant and you can read that behavior of the elephant to determine whether or not it's safe to approach, how close can we get. And those guides will have a very good understanding of each of those animals' behavior to be able to, like, hey, that elephant can be a little bit, on edge here and there. Let's give it. In that instance, I don't know enough about it, but I will say when the video does start, they're moving away from the elephant, which could be giving the elephant a chase response. That's why you never run from elephants. Even if you're if it approaches you, you do not run. Because if you run, then it's like, hey, I have you. You're scared of me and I'm coming. Right. If you stand your ground, you typically can bluff them off for the most part. There's little things to read on the elephant behavior wise to let you know how to gauge that. But when the video starts, they're moving. And so if he's aggressive and he's moved, maybe he's already in thinking, okay, they know I have you, they're scared of me. And so that's why it continues to move through the moment and actually flip the vehicle. So it's hard to say engage. But most of these guides, this is why it doesn't happen very often. You have to imagine these guides are out there in the field all across South Africa, Kenya, all these places. And this never is happening. But there's small instances that it's misread or, there's these outliers that I call. Wildlife is typically not aggressive for the most part, but there's outlier situations that happen if we're going to be in their environment. We're opening up that.
Right. I want to go back to the zoo conversation for one second. So I am friendly with, I've had her on the show, a woman who owns the Zoological Wildlife Foundation in Miami. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but they take in wild animals and this is where they live now. A lot of people have a problem with it because, obviously they think these animals should be in the wild. But her version is these animals cannot live in the wild for whatever reason each one individually has. So what are your thoughts about wildlife in zoos?
Ooh, okay. So this is a big topic that gets asked a lot. It's a topic for everyone that has a very, like, you're either very for it or for it, very against it.
Mm-hmm.
Being involved in conservation enough, I've stopped putting a blanket statement on all zoos are bad, only because I have had instances in certain zoos with professionals that really care about animals and are trying to do the best. And there are certain, instances where some zoos are actually doing everything they can from a conservation standpoint, where all those animals can't be, you know, placed back out in the wild. And so now they're in education programs to help people. And some of those are taking a large portion of the profits, and it's going back into conservation organizations. So there's lots of different ways that I judge each zoo particularly, because a lot of terrible ones out there, but there's a lot of good trying to truly do the best they can. It's a difficult conversation to have, because each zoo needs their own research done. You need to do your own research about and read up before you support them, because a lot of them do put on this show that they're doing all the right things and they're not. So yeah.
There's something to be said for these animals that maybe something happened to them in the past, or like you're talking about, the a poacher got the mom and the dad, and it's living by itself and it can't fend for itself. So it goes into a place where these people can take care of it and feed it and house it and all these things. But then it's like, how do they get back into the wild in an appropriate manner where they know how to take care of themselves and fend for themselves? And then not only that, do you remember that documentary? I think it was called Blackfin, about the dolphins. Such a terrible movie to watch and see the trauma that the whales go through when they're separated from their baby and they're circling and looking for it. And then the aggression that's happened in SeaWorld and other places that they have these animals, because they just go in a circle. I mean, it is so terrible to watch that. And then to see that they have to perform, and no wonder they are, you know, killing their trainers or beheading them, and people, you know, were like, oh my God, these animals are so terrible. But it's just, what an awful way to live. But from having gone through to see this zoo and some of the animals, they pointed out how they could not live in the wild and they were, you know, the savior for them. I mean, it made sense. But then you see these things again on Instagram where it's like some guy has raised a tiger and then brings it to Africa, lets it out in the wild. And you're just like, oh my God, this poor tiger, how is it going to live when it's been like living in this dude's bed for however many years? So, you know, the whole thing is, you know, I have so many questions about it.
Yeah. I'll answer one that makes pretty easy. So aside from the zoos, when it comes to the SeaWorld side of things, that marine mammals should not be in any way in enclosures. None of them.
Yeah.
There's no need for it. Very rarely there's an instance where you need to take a baby dolphin out of the ocean and put it into marine mammals. There's no excuse for it, in my opinion.
Right. Have they started to crack down on that and do less of it?
They have. And there's more and more outcry for it because it's so glaringly wrong. And there's no reason for those animals to be taken out of the wild and being put in. Now, in certain countries in the world, it's going to take a longer time to do that. But here we're getting somewhere with it. And there's a lot of great people doing that work. When it comes to animals, whether it's, I'll use the jaguars, for example, that Oja Nueva, they are a rewilding organization in the Amazon. So they'll be taking, they just had three jaguars come in, baby jaguars, where the mom was shot in a local community. They take on that jaguar and they go through a whole rewilding process of years and years and years, isolated out in the Amazon. And they're succeeding success in the margays and the ocelots that are being put out, but takes a long time, a lot of resources, a lot of research, a lot of data, because if it's done wrong, the government shuts down you being able to just release jaguars. So countries, policies all have different. It can be done, but it has to be done properly by true professionals. I would also say, for people that want to have animals and find the excuse to be close to them and have them at sanctuaries, will sometimes try to find the excuses and really tell themselves, oh, this animal could never this, or this animal could never that, or we need to take in this animal because there's a selfishness there that of wanting to interact and bond with these amazing animals.
Yeah.
Which I get and kind of understand. That's why I also am careful in how I talk about people that work at zoos, because the people that work at zoos really, really love animals. They may not necessarily support the zoo, but they want to be close to animals. We have that affiliation to want that, that bond that we chase, right? So it's a very, that's why the zoo topic is a big one, because there's so many different avenues you can really dive into and dissect.
Yeah.
And you just got to look at per case by case basis, because a blanket statement can, it's hard to do because it's so complex.
Right. Do you follow those guys that I wish I knew their names, but the guys that are like now living in Africa with these tigers and lions and hanging out with them? I'm more fascinated by those stories. I think one of the tiger's names was Elsa or something. I don't remember, but the tiger that lived with a family, they sent it out. And then like years later, you know, they go and see if they can find this tiger, and they spend like 4 days looking, they can't find it. And on their last day, she appears and she hugs them. And it's like, you're sobbing watching this stuff. Is that stuff real? Do they have those types of memories for humans?
That's a great question. And I don't know a whole lot about it. And the reason that I don't know a lot about it is because a lot of conservation organizations, the reputable ones, the ones that are really doing tangible good work, don't necessarily have a great view or respect for that space. And so you try to distance yourself from it because it can, it's just not always the best look. And so there's a lot that I don't follow. Like those types of people I try not to follow too much. Or if I do, I do because there's a curiosity there. But yeah, I don't know a lot about it because there's a lot of controversy that comes in with that.
Right.
Do you think that some of those animals would create a bond with their, in their upbringing with a human? Yes, you can get habituated enough over the amount of time. I think that's, there's probably some truth to it, but I wouldn't be speaking from a true,
right,
factual experience.
Right. Okay. Talk about SOSA. Is this where you work? Are you the founder of this? Tell me more about it.
Yeah. So the SOSA is a conservation company built on a foundation of supporting the nonprofit partners that form the Alliance, the Save Our Species Alliance. And so everything that we do is to support and help them in some capacity, whether it's running expeditions, conservation impact initiatives with them through media or trying to get them funding. We run different projects and branding. So it's a conservation company built to support nonprofits and their missions.
Got it. Okay. So if people want to take, or does this company that you work with create trips for people to learn more about conservation or helping wildlife? Like, talk to me about that.
Yeah. So we have a bunch coming up, for example, that we're in the planning where we want to go down the Amazon. You get to actually be a part of the camera trapping and see what the research and data collection looks like, see what the rewilding process looks like, learn from the actual true professionals in the field. You get to see a lot of these animals you would never otherwise in a natural environment in the Amazon. You get to do, when we go to Botswana, you get to like actually learn with the kids and bring kids out onto safari for the first time ever they never had. These kids that have lived in poverty in these local communities around these reserves, they've never seen the wildlife that, you know, it's grown up in their backyard. So there's conservation impact built into it so that we can create exactly what you had, which is an aha moment to create stewards of conservation. So they want to care for the rest of their life. So how do we create that? And that's not necessarily just through a safari vehicle and taking photos. How can we create impactful, very memorable experiences that are interactive, kind of hands-on, whether it's a rhino procedure or something where you can really feel it. And so that's what we try to deliver, while also providing income for the nonprofits that we build these with.
Right. No, I love that idea because, you know, I have a daughter who's about to be 12, and, you know, instead of taking kids on these trips, like you're going to the Four Seasons and, you know, the Bahamas or wherever, it's like, I always am looking for like, oh, why don't we go somewhere and like build a school or like, you know, for 2 weeks or something where you really feel like you're doing something instead of laying on a beach, having rosé. I could do that all the time. I live in Florida. Yeah. But, you know, I want more of that, like a way that I can even, it's safe enough to bring my daughter to tell people about it. And then so she could have those experiences. So I want to make sure that at the end of this, we find out where we can hear more about that and sign up. But are there going to be like year round where people that can't go during the summer, but they can go on a spring break or winter vacation that you guys have these scheduled all the time?
Yeah. So we are in the building phase. We sold out pretty much everything that we had originally run this past year. And so now we're like trying to keep up with, okay, new places, new environments, like let's get them some help. And this is a new angle. The Amazon is going to be, is an amazing place that people aren't thinking about going to. You should go to the Amazon. So we're thinking about building that out. Hopefully that runs in August. And then Botswana is another one. And so we're trying to find unique, we're not trying to pave the same road. We're trying to do different things, but there's a lot of logistics to go into creating these experiences for people with timing and this and that and everything that helped going on. So yes, they will be continuing to be pumped out as they're created. And they sell out fast, which is fantastic.
Amazing. How many people go on each trip?
It'll change. So it could be six people with a shark specific trip where, because you know, you're on a confined boat, there's only a certain room. South Africa that we're doing in May is nine people. OHOP could be anywhere from 10 to 20, depending on the timing when we want to run it. So there's really a combination. I would say the sweet spot's probably 10 to 12 max.
And are you training people to run these trips, or are you on every trip?
I'll be on it. I'm co-host running it with the professional from the nonprofit who's a specialist in what they do, in the animal they work with. So we run it cohesively together. We both have different skill sets, obviously, but we run it together and deliver that together.
Oh my God, I think this is so exciting. I'm going to have to keep your number so that we can find out how to do this. Okay, so what else do you want our listeners to know about how they can get involved, or you know, things that might be misunderstood about wildlife conservation and taking care of these animals and you know, being an advocate for them, as opposed to what I think people think is you go to a zoo or you watch a movie about them or whatever it is, but there's more to it.
Yeah, I think we've just really lost touch over here, especially in North America, right? We don't see, all we see is through a screen, the magnificent like documentaries, and it's like, oh, and then it's off your brain. You don't think about it again. We don't get the opportunity to experience it. People don't choose that avenue when you think about going on a trip or doing that, because it's like booze, this, that. It's like the dopamine you can get from these crazy interactions and experiences in these really amazing places. Not only does it change you, but the money that goes into that actually conserves the places that you're typically, if you're doing the right research, really helps. So it's getting away from, we've just lost touch, but also it doesn't get enough attention, right? Mm-hmm. There's no money in conservation. The news and media doesn't need to push it, because there's no give back. There's no money in this. So it's just, you need to get out and experience these things. You'll see why it's important to protect it.
And then it becomes word of mouth that people just want to get involved.
It is, because the thing is here is this, is like when I try to explain it, right? And I don't know if I've talked about this a couple different times. The way I'm trying to explain to people, these aren't, less than 3% of all philanthropy and money goes into conservation of wildlife, which is wild, because when you really think about us and our stability as humans on this planet is based on the health of the planet, but all of the little puzzle pieces that wildlife are in the ecosystems that allow us to flourish and be here. And there's no money in it, not from the government, not from nobody, and it's slowly disappearing. So when you're thinking about a donation here or there to environmental causes and wildlife, it's not a donation. You're just investing in your kid's future, essentially, because right now it is not looking good at all and is the foundation of what makes us us and us be able to do what we're doing. So we just don't see it. There's no value. There's not an initial return on that investment, but the future will have that. So it's doing it not necessarily for you. Yes, you are, and the wildlife, but do it for kid, the earth. We'd have nothing without those puzzle pieces in place, and we're slowly losing those.
Right.
Not good.
Right. Okay. You said you had a favorite animal basically, which was the rhino. Is that still your favorite animal that you've ever worked with?
Yeah, but I could work with elephants in about a month and that could change. So yeah, I'm going to be working hands-on with elephants and that might change things. Been very close to elephants, but not in that very intimate way. So rhinos, I've had that. So we'll see. And as I continue, you know, I'm always surprised by different animals and their uniqueness and their personality. So always be rhinos, because it's what got me started. So I owe that to them to constantly keep messaging or, you know, bringing them up. And there's such a need for that. But yeah, let's stick with rhinos for now.
Right. Okay. Well, you are going to love the elephants. They're so beautiful and so smart and just amazing. Would you ever do another reality show in the world of, you know, dating or activity like Survivor or Amazing Race?
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, there's been instances where I've been through some of those processes before. They just haven't necessarily pinned it, but yeah. And there's things in the work. So there's potential here in the next year or so that you could see that happen.
Okay. Awesome. That'll be exciting. Okay. So remind people where they can find out more about you. And also if they want to learn more about these trips you have, please let me know where we can send everybody.
Yeah. So you can just, Instagram's the best way right now, just at my name, Blake Moines. We're going to start getting YouTube up and rolling and trying to get more out there on that, in that space. But the.sosa on Instagram, thesosa.com. We'll start to roll out all these trips that we're talking about, and they kind of come and go pretty quickly. So follow along on that Instagram page. That's where we're going to be announcing a lot of them. And hopefully you get on one and have one of those aha moments that me and you have talked about, because it is important. And it does change your life.
It will change your life. And are those going to be appropriate for people to bring their kids on, or is it adults only?
It will be dependent. So some of the trips, depending on what we do and how we build out some of those itineraries, may not be suitable for kids, but the one in South Africa, for example, would have been. So there wasn't anything.
So you have kids, you have parents and kids in mind for all of it.
Exactly. Yes. Some won't necessarily tend to that, but we are also always thinking about what the demographic will be for that. And this is more family oriented and whatnot. So yes.
Yes. Okay. Amazing. I love everything you do, Blake. I think that it's fantastic that you've taken your platform and done something really great with it. And obviously, I think the message you have is so important, and we should all get involved in some way of understanding how to make the earth better for the people later on in life and the animals. So I appreciate you, and I wish you the best. And hopefully my daughter, Wyatt, and I will see you on a trip coming soon.
You'll have to message. We can sort that out for you. No problem.
I would love that. Okay.
Thank you for having
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Misunderstood.